Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, our conversation with Senator John Husted about his visit to Findlay yesterday with Acting Secretary of Labor Keith Sonderling in tow. Also this morning, in case you missed it, the annual Flag City Night Out event happens this evening at Riverside Park. We'll get a preview in our community and business spotlight this morning for agriculture needs and more. Country Corner is Legacy Farmers Cooperative's retail outlet serving the entire community and happening around town. It's one of Findlay's biggest and most anticipated events of the year. Flag City Balloon Fest lifts off this weekend. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, August 4th, 2026. You remember a few weeks ago when Ohioans, particularly in the Dayton area, welcomed Buc-ee's with open arms when they opened their location near Huber Heights. Record crowds came out. It was the first Buc-ee's in Ohio, and everybody was all excited about this. But now, some people in the nearby suburb of Beaver Creek are not too happy with the company. Buc-ee's has filed a federal lawsuit against the owners of Beaver's Mini Mart, which is a convenience store with a cartoon beaver on their sign that Buc-ee's says looks too similar to their logo. Now, if you see it, and I looked it up and looked at both, they are both beavers, but that's pretty much where the similarity ends. That's it. And this convenience store, Beaver's Mini Mart, is in Beaver Creek. So the idea that it would have a beaver on its sign is not out of the ordinary or out of the expected. But Buc-ee's says, no, they're not allowed to have a beaver. They say it could cause confusion among customers and is likely to lead people to believe that there is a connection between the two businesses. Trust me when I say that there would be no such confusion between Buc-ee's with its 200 gas pumps, 74,000 square foot superstore, and its own exit off the interstate. There is no way that there would be any confusion with Beaver's with their zero gas pumps on the corner of a residential neighborhood. And honestly, this place looks like it has restrooms that are not nearly as clean. Let's just put it that way. I don't think there's going to be any confusion between Beaver's Mini Mart and Buc-ee's. The owner of Beaver's, the Mini Mart, say that the lawsuit is a case of corporate bullying and they intend to fight it. Honestly, I long and short of it is, I don't think Buc-ee's has a case here. I mean, they're going to try and bully them out of, you know, their logo. But on the other hand, if the owners of Rocky the Flying Squirrel from the Bullwinkle cartoons decided to sue, then they could be in trouble, because that was when I saw this Beaver's Mini Mart thing. That was the first thing I thought. Was Rocky the Flying Squirrel. That's what he looks like. But anyway, Buc-ee's suing this little teeny tiny mom and pop mini mart in Beaver Creek. Anyway, just one of the more interesting stories that made headlines yesterday. This kind of went viral on social media. What else is going on? Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, brace yourself. Many Ohioans are likely to get record high electricity bills this month. New numbers from the Ohio Utility Rate Survey show that residential bills bigger than ever for the average subscriber in many areas of the state. A lot of consumers getting record high electricity bills for the month of July. And even in central Ohio, where they're not setting new records, the average bill in Columbus is like a dollar less than, you know, the record high. So I mean, basically at or above record highs. Rising electricity rates and the hot weather that lingered throughout much of the last month are to blame. Statewide, July bills are averaging 12% higher than the same month last year and over 60% higher than what they were in 2015. 60% higher than a decade ago for your electricity bills. I bring it up just so that you can brace yourself if you haven't seen your electric bill yet this month. I can't wait. How about you? Doctors seeing a new cosmetic side effect caused by weight loss drugs like Ozempic. So the other day we were talking about this report about GLP-1s maybe benefiting those with fertility issues, on this. Well, now they're saying, warning about these unintended side effects. The condition known as temporal hollowing or sunken temples on the side of the skull can make the face look older and thinner. Experts say, well, if you want to look thinner, that's kind of the purpose many people are taking Ozempic for. So that part probably is not a big deal for a lot of folks. But experts say this is becoming more noticeable as GLP-1 medications grow in popularity. Temporal hollowing is the loss of fat in the temples, the areas on the side of the forehead. As we know, the condition is more likely to happen when patients lose weight too quickly or do not follow a personalized treatment plan. So, just kind of look, it does. It makes you, it's not attractive. There's sunken temples. But apparently, I figure we needed to bring it up since we were talking about, over several weeks, we've talked about all of the amazing benefits that doctors and researchers are coming up with this GLP-1. So it's a miracle drug, but there are some side effects, apparently. A couple of other items here. Among the first things that you need to know, most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Wallet Hub is out with their list of the happiest cities in America, and finding happiness will probably require changing your zip code. So they rank 182 of the largest cities in America. And that's kind of all of Wallet Hub's list. There are like 182 cities. You got that 182 largest cities. I don't know why they settled on 182. I don't know why not 180. Why not 185? Why not 200? And even 200. That would make sense. But it's 182. For whatever reason. Anyway, they based the ranking of the happiest cities. Residents' happiness is ranked using factors like income, mental well-being, physical health, and social connections. And they found the five happiest cities in the U.S. in order are Fremont, California at number one, Bismarck, North Dakota at number two, Scottsdale, Arizona is third, South Burlington, Vermont is fourth, and Fargo, North Dakota is fifth. So those are the top five happiest cities in America. No Ohio cities, none crack the top 10, or the top 50, or even the top 100. There's not a single Ohio city among the 100 happiest cities. Columbus is Ohio's happiest city, according to this ranking, at number 117 out of 182. 117. Cincinnati is 146th, followed by Akron at 173. Toledo at number 177 out of 182. And Cleveland is the least happy city, least happy Ohio city on the list at number 179. The only cities ranked lower than that are Shreveport, Louisiana, Memphis, and Detroit at the very bottom of the list. So, apparently, we're not very happy. according to the WalletHub ranking. Make of that what you will. I don't know. I'm happy. I don't know what they're talking about. Maybe I just think I'm happy because I don't know any better. Maybe if I move to Fremont, California or Bismarck, North Dakota, maybe I'd be happier than I could even imagine. Although I would have to think, I mean, Fremont is like in the middle of nowhere, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of out in that, like in the desert area of California. I don't know California geography real well, but it strikes me as that's not, you know, a real hopping place. And I'm guessing that if I'm in Bismarck, I may be happy now, but come winter, I don't think I'm going to be. Let's do that survey again and see if Bismarck stays at number two once the snow flies. That's all I'm saying. And lastly here, among the first things that you need to know this morning, the last first thing you need to know, and this is something that is good to know as you're just heading off to work this morning. A new survey finds nearly half of American workers, nearly half, 47% to be exact, 47% of American workers are engaging in certain intimate adult activities during work hours. During work hours. Research suggests that a little afternoon delight may boost productivity and improve employee mental and physical health. So maybe we should be encouraging more of this. I don't know. Among Gen Z workers in particular, 38%, more than a third, are actively seeking employers who offer private in-office spaces for intimate activity. Are there a lot of those employers out there? I may be wrong, but I don't think I've ever worked at such an establishment. Maybe I have and didn't know it. Maybe I'm missing out. I don't know. Relationship experts urge that people should thoroughly research the boundaries at work before exploring new locations. Ask your boss if there's a specific spot that this sort of extracurricular activity is allowed. That blew me away. 47% of American workers are getting a little something-something during work hours. You can see why this is important to know as you head off to work this morning. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
The Car Show, Saturday mornings at 10 on 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM.
So our cover story this morning, Senator John Husted was in Findlay yesterday. He was part of a roundtable discussion at the Owens Community College Dana Center for Advanced Manufacturing. And he was joined by acting U.S. Labor Secretary Keith Sonderling, who was in attendance as well. And following that roundtable discussion, following that event, Senator Husted made time to join us to recap it. The overarching topic of this roundtable was billed as a discussion of efforts to strengthen Ohio's workforce and meet the workforce needs of Northwest Ohio. Share some of the highlights of that discussion.
Yeah, so right now in Ohio, we have a record. The record in terms of the number of jobs our state's ever had, one of the lowest unemployment rates ever. And we had a lot of employers there, like Grobe, like Whirlpool, like First Solar. And they're having a hard time finding enough people with the right kind of skills to fill the jobs they're creating. So this was about having the secretary here, Secretary of Labor, to hear what's going on to try to solve that challenge. It's a good challenge to have because if we can help people get the right kind of skills, they have more earning power, more job security. And we need help from the Department of Labor to help fund some of the programs that are going very well here in Northwest Ohio.
to that end, talk a little bit about some of those programs and some of the legislation that is aimed at furthering that goal.
Yeah. So let's start with career centers. We want every high school student to graduate career ready. We're doing pre-apprenticeships in high school, which the Department of Labor has a role in. And we want every high school student to, to graduate career ready, going right into a job, and we can help strengthen those partnerships. We also have things like Workforce Pell, which is helping our community colleges and our universities help students earn workforce credentials. Pell grants used to be thought of as, hey, you got to go to college for 2 or 4 years to get them. Now we can help people earn skills in 6 weeks through these programs. That way they can go to work and earn and hopefully have their employer pay for their education as they grow those skills.
As we mentioned, you had the acting labor secretary in tow, which I'm sure was significant in a couple of ways. First of all, with respect to his contribution to the discussion, I'm sure that a number of these topics, were discussed at some length. But as the secretary was speaking to the attendees, what generally seemed to generate the most interest? What really held their attention among the things that he had to add to the conversation?
Well, one thing is that he has some grants that he can give to these educational institutions and to these workforce partnerships to help facilitate those efforts to reach the young adults or the students. We're talking about all the way down into junior high to help them see the career paths, to get them connected to job training, mm-hmm. to get them the workforce skills or the certifications that they need to go and work, and to also help people who are already in the workforce continue to build their skills so that they can move up and earn more. That was what a lot of the employers and the educational institutions were interested in today, is how they can get the federal government, the Department of Labor, to be more engaged at the local level with those grants, with those programs, to help create these pathways for young people, young adults to go into these jobs and earn more and have more job security.
And secondly, I'm curious as to kind of the reverse of that question. What did he take away from this event? I mean, clearly, you're very familiar with the labor situation and the opportunities and so on here in Northwest Ohio and around the state. But for the Secretary of the Labor Department, when he gets a look at boiling this down to this segment of Northwest Ohio, what did he kind of take away from this event?
Well, I think he understands that Ohio has its act together, that we have a thriving economy as we're doing more made in America. I always say you can't do made in America without made in Ohio, because from food to cars, to trucks, to airplanes, to steel, we do that. And I think he learned that we take, if I have the takeaway for him is that businesses and educators are working closely in Ohio out of necessity, because they need a workforce, they need skills. As we have growth, mm-hmm. We got to work together. And I think he saw Ohio doing that, which I hope, once he sees that we've got our act together, that will encourage him to send some of those resources our way to help us build that next generation of talent and improve the earning potential of Ohio's workforce.
One of the recurring topics whenever the labor force is discussed in 2026 is the disruptive impact of artificial intelligence, and especially for those students who are now considering the kind of careers that we're talking about here. What do you say to those who may be concerned that this road to success that we're talking about is not going to turn out to be a dead end?
Yeah, well, it's a great question, and I know that there's a lot of anxiety about it. But one of the things that you can use tools like AI for is to help guide you through this path. Yes, there is a lack of need for coders, for example. Some of those types of jobs are going away. But there's a huge demand for electricians and plumbers and pipe fitters and welders and things like that, where you can earn six figures or more doing those kinds of skills. So it's helping people really navigate this change, to be on the winning side of it, to use it for good rather than undermining the fears that people have. I know that some people are worried about their jobs going away, but what we talked about today is how to use it as a tool for good that's helping to create jobs. And so far, 4 years into sort of the AI revolution, we actually have seen a job increase in Ohio rather than a job reduction. It's just it changes the nature of jobs. So we've got to help people adjust to that. We really pushed him hard on that issue today.
Let me segue to kind of a related topic with respect to that, and that is the proliferation of data centers to power all of this artificial intelligence. And that has been the subject of much controversy in and of itself. Your opponent in November's Senate race, Sherrod Brown, has painted you as the face of data centers in Ohio, obviously playing on the widespread opposition to them. So how do you respond to that?
Yeah, well, that's not true. I have been the one fighting in the U.S. Senate to hold data centers accountable and to make them pay for the energy that they use. We want them to build power plants, to build their own energy rather than taking it off the grid that could risk increasing residential rates. And by doing this, we hope that they will build energy and frankly, put more of it back on the grid. To my opponent, Chris, I have to say, under his watch, under the Biden and Obama administrations, 23 power plants closed in Ohio, representing half the energy that Ohio uses on a daily basis. It's the loss of that generation that has created some of the upward pressure on prices. We need to build more power plants. I'm going to push the data center companies to do that, push them to use local labor like the electricians and plumbers and pipe fitters and welders to drive up drive jobs and wage growth for those occupations. So and then also, I don't want the federal government telling people whether they have to have data centers or don't have data centers. That should be a local decision. Ohio's lost out in the past on tech revolutions. We got to be on the winning side of this one.
Again, Senator John Husted with us this morning, a roundtable discussion of the Owens Community College Dana Center for Advanced Manufacturing with acting U.S. Labor Secretary Keith Sonderling in tow. Before we let you go, I do want to ask you about something completely different, because we were just talking about this yesterday on the program. My wife and I were at the Ohio State Fair over the weekend, completely in awe of all of the improvements that have been made to the state fairgrounds. And of course, before moving on to the Senate, you were a part of the DeWine administration at the launch of the Expo 2050 project that envisioned all of these improvements. What was, and I know you were there, last week as the fair opened, what was your reaction to seeing all of that come to fruition?
Well, it's amazing. Those new facilities really put a shine on the Ohio State Fair. I know Governor DeWine wanted to make it the best fair in the country, and with these new enhancements, it's made it so much better. Now, you go to the Dairy Barn, you still get the same delicious ice cream next to the butter cow. Yep. You still get the great pork sandwiches, pork tenderloin sandwiches. But you can also see modern farm equipment and technology at work. You can still do all the rides. So everything that people enhanced. And oh, by the way, a lot of these buildings are air conditioned, which I know when I was talking to people, they appreciated the comfort of having a place to go away from the heat if it gets hot.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, Senator John Husted with us this morning. Senator, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Chris, great to be with you.
You know, over the years, it has been proven that the National Night Out is an important tool for increasing awareness of community policing programs and building bridges between officers and those that they serve and protect. And today is the day for the annual National Night Out program around the country and here locally as well. In case you missed it, last week on the program, we spoke with Findlay Police Department Crime Prevention Officer Brian White about this year's Flag City Night Out event. A lot of fun. It's a great night out with the community, meeting all of the kids, but there is a serious purpose behind it.
Yeah, so the sole purpose of Flag City Night Out is to get the community engaged with first responders, not just police, but also fire, EMS, all the people that come out and help us when we need help, right? And when we talk about especially kids, a lot of times when they are interacting with law enforcement, it's usually because we're on a call, and a lot of times those are not good interactions.
Right.
So we like to set up an environment that's fun for everyone. It's a great opportunity for the public to kind of come out and, you know, just hang out with us. And it also allows opportunity for them to learn about what we do and also ask any questions that they might have.
Yeah. And not just for the kids, but also for the grownups, for the parents to, you know, get information, like we said, community policing programs, you know, raise any, ask any questions, raise any issues, concerns that they may have, that kind of thing. So this is a terrific opportunity for law enforcement to really connect in a rather unique way with the community.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's actually kind of funny. Whenever we host these events, a lot of times it's more the parents that enjoy checking out our equipment or asking questions or, hey, I want to sit in the back of a police car because hopefully I'll never be here again, right?
Right.
Kind of one of those deals. And one of the things that I really wanted to encourage when I took over this program a long time ago was a community resource fair, right? So area nonprofits, they come out and they provide information about what they do in the community to those that are most likely in a situation to utilize those services. So that is a component of our event. And every year it seems to grow a little bit bigger. We get more area organizations that come out and again, provide just information about what they do.
So give us all of the details on this.
Yeah. So Flag City Night Out, or I should say National Night Out, the national program is held on the first Tuesday of August every single year. So it's always kind of the same date, but our event will take place at Riverside Park near the volleyball courts, starting at 6 o'clock, and that goes till 9. We have free food, so pizza, hot dogs, all the good stuff, chips, pop, water, you know, all that stuff. A few organizations also come out to help us, like Movement Church. They provide root beer floats for everyone. So Kona Ice will be there as well, providing, and this is 100% free. That is one of the things that we wanted to do, is make sure this was kept as a free event to the community, thanks to donations from the public. And so free food, music, entertainment. We have our annual mascot games, where area mascots compete in our version of the Olympics, right? Musical chairs and things like that. It's always a good time. And we also do a lot of live demonstrations. The public really seems to enjoy these. For instance, the police dogs. We have a canine demonstration where our canines are brought out to the public and kind of shown what they can do, right? So apprehension, narcotics detection, things like that. We also have some drones that we put up in the air. We explain to the public why we utilize these things, how we use them. And also something we introduced a couple years ago, which has gone over very well, was our less lethal tools demonstration. So for instance, our taser, our less lethal shotgun, we show these to the public and explain how they work and explain why we would utilize these items, because a lot of times they kind of look like scary devices to most people, but we can actually explain how these are used as a de-escalation tool rather than turning things into a more forceful contact.
Again, as you mentioned, it is all free for the community to come out and have some fun, meet the officers, engage in that dialogue. Over the years, can you point to, like we said, this is a terrific opportunity to emphasize the community policing programs and make those connections and so on. Have you seen that evolve out of the night out events in the past, where you've had some success in neighborhoods that maybe have been, you know, points of emphasis, I guess, for lack of a better term?
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, in me in my crime prevention role, I am always kind of out in the public, so I see a lot of familiar faces all the time. But one of the things that struck me one year was We have our police versus fire games where we have area kids pair up with an officer and a firefighter. And one of the things is usually a three-legged race, right? And I remember being out and about with another officer and a kid comes up and says to the other officer, right, hey, you were my partner in the three-legged race, right? And that's really kind of the connections that, we talk about, right? This event served to facilitate that connection with this child. And now this child remembers this officer, and if they are in trouble, that's who they're going to think of.
Yeah. Right?
Same way the SRO, school resource officer programs work in schools, right? Mm-hmm. Because these kids make connections with these officers, and otherwise it might just be a scary figure to them. Now they're an actual face and something beyond the badge.
Yeah. So again, this pays dividends well beyond just the one night. And I don't think we can emphasize that enough, because really at the end of the day, it's about creating a safer community for everyone.
Absolutely.
And in the process, you may learn about something that needs attention from the law enforcement community. So obviously paying dividends in that way as well. It all starts when?
Yeah, 6 o'clock
okay.
On Tuesday, August 4th at Riverside Park.
Our conversation last week with Findlay Police Department Crime Prevention Officer Brian White about this evening's Flag City Night Out event happening at Riverside Park. If you want more details, we've got it linked up at our webpage at goodmornings.net. Looks like beautiful weather for tonight's event at Riverside Park, with the entire community, everybody invited to come out and celebrate as part of the National Night Out event.
Now, the Good Mornings Community and Business Spotlight.
Once again, putting Legacy Farmers Cooperative into the spotlight this morning, and Maddie Mathias is with us. She is the store manager at Legacy's Country Corner, which, for those who may not realize it, this is a typical retail establishment. This is open to everyone, a perfect example of what we say when we say that Legacy is not just about farmers.
No, so we've got pet supplies, we've got dog food, we even carry Best Breed, which is made here in Findlay. It's just a minute down the road from us here at the store. We've got livestock equipment, livestock feeds, fertilizers, pond chemicals. We even do pond water testing, and we also do soil testing to test the pH levels in your soil and everything too. So we've got a lot of stuff here.
Yeah. And this is all stuff that people, you know, whether they're farmers or not, obviously going to be interested in. And you've got the propane station. Folks may not know, this is a great place to get your propane refilled, and you've got a deal on that.
Yeah, so propane is $17 after tax for a 20-pound tank. We can also do fills on forklift tanks as well.
And mulch, we're coming up on fall mulching season. You've got a deal on mulch. Again, this is for everybody.
Yeah. So mulch right now, we've got bulk mulch. It's $32 a yard. And then we can also deliver anywhere for $35 extra.
That is a great deal for those who don't want to get the back of their vehicle all mulchy.
Yeah.
So take advantage of that. Now, specifically for the agriculture community, you know, we've got the Hancock County Fair right around the corner now. And for those who are showing, you have a special sale going on, the Stock Your Showbox sale.
So that'll be from August 17th through the 21st. It'll be 15% off Weaver and Sullivan show supplies, as well as our shavings will be $7 a bale.
And I would imagine you see an awful lot of the young people who are out there showing for the fair season.
Oh, yeah. We've been getting a lot of special orders lately for show feeds. So we've also just stocked up on all of our show supplies. So stop in and buy some of those during that sale.
Big time of year for all of that. It is a big, big deal.
Oh, yeah.
Very exciting, though, and I'm sure that that's part of, you know, one of the things that makes this job fun.
Yes, it is. It definitely is.
And also, we would be remiss if we didn't mention that you have something special going on Fridays through the summer and into the fall as well.
Yeah. So we've got Food Truck Fridays in August. We are still looking for someone to fill our Friday, August 7th slot.
Okay.
But on the 14th, we have Weens and Beans Coffee coming from 7:30 to 10:30, and then Johnny Burritos. They'll be here from 11 to 4. On Friday the 21st, we've got Lola's Eats and Treats. And on the 28th, we have OTR Smokehouse. And then we've got a couple after the fair in September as well.
Man, I tell you what, you can't go wrong with some of those. Those are some great. Oh, no. So you eat pretty well on Fridays there at Country Corner.
Yeah, yeah, I do.
For those who have never been and would like to stop by, what are the hours for the Country Corner store?
So we're open Monday through Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. And then Saturdays we're open 8 a.m. to noon.
Again, Maddie Mathias is the store manager at Legacy Country Corner, Legacy Farmers Cooperative, in the spotlight this morning. Maddie, thanks very much for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
The Community and Business Spotlight is a promotional advertisement paid for by the featured sponsor.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
In the news business, there are two separate and distinct groups: breaking news and the news that is already broken. These are their stories.
A postal service worker in Florida is accused of stealing a winning lottery ticket from the mail and then cashing it in herself. Lakeisha Lockhart was arrested last month following a joint investigation. She later admitted to stealing the lottery ticket. The player had reported that the winning Pick 4 ticket worth $2,600 never arrived at its destination. Well, that was a little suspicious. It was traced to a Florida lottery office in Miami and had been redeemed. And then through some investigation, Ms. Lockhart was arrested, the postal service worker who had pilfered the ticket. She faces multiple charges, including mail theft and grand theft, because it was worth $2,600. Here's the question that I have in the whole thing. What in the world were you sending a winning lottery ticket through the mail for? I mean, what? I don't understand how this was mailed. I don't know the... But I don't know the ins and outs of the Florida lottery, so I have no idea. But did she think she was going to get away with this? I mean, so I'm going to steal this $2,300 or $2,600 winning lottery ticket. Nobody will ever know. Also in the broken news this morning, in a case of what did you think was going to happen, a live animal got loose at a FedEx store in Memphis, Tennessee, when a customer opened a box labeled live animal. No kidding. Yeah. But Roderick Duncan says it wasn't his fault. He arrived at the FedEx store to pick up a package containing the pet iguana that he had ordered. Again, people ordering pets through the mail. Weird things being sent through the mail. Anyway, he went to pick up the pet iguana he had ordered, and the workers asked him to open the box, which again had the words live animal printed on it, to see what was inside. I don't know, maybe a live animal. In a shocking turn of events, the iguana, named Titan, slipped out of the box and started running around the store, startling the employees and Mr. Duncan himself. He was bigger, way bigger than I expected, Mr. Duncan said. Eventually, Titan the iguana was safely corralled, but I'm guessing it'll probably be a while before the Memphis FedEx store employees ask someone to open a live animal box again. I would hope, anyway, you know? Seemed like a... What did you think was going to happen? And finally, in the broken news this morning, A professor at Alcorn State University in Mississippi is being praised for his creativeness after catching nearly his entire class using artificial intelligence to complete a history midterm exam. What he did, and this was rather clever, Professor Jason Gibson embedded a secret instruction in white font onto the exam question, which is administered online in like a document, and it was printed in white font, so it was invisible to the naked eye, but the computer could see it. And students at the prompt directed an AI tool to insert a nonsensical reference to Madagascar into the response. Students who blindly submitted AI-generated answers included some bizarre phrases. One was, Madagascar purple bicycle whispers to the ceiling. And so when he saw that, he knew immediately that the student had used AI. And nearly the entire class did. He posted about it online, and whole thing went viral, sparking debate about AI use in academia. The professor, for his part, Professor Gibson, said his biggest concern wasn't the use of AI itself, but the fact that the students were obviously not even proofreading their submissions before they turned it in, because they would have noticed it almost immediately. It was full of gibberish. That is a concern, but pretty clever. The university itself praised the professor for his clever idea. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
It's a busy intersection in your neighborhood. Drivers, cyclists, and pedestrians all moving with their own destinations in mind. Think of the roadway like an ecosystem. Every move affects someone else. And whether you're behind the wheel, on two wheels, or on foot, the road is full of signs, signals, and people telling you what's ahead. When we anticipate what's happening around us, when we're predictable, when we share the space, everything is safer. There's space for all of us. Breathe the road, Ohio. Brought to you by the Ohio Department of Transportation.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news, and the statistics that shape our lives. And this is a common problem in many relationships. How do you deal with disruptive sleep habits of your partner, with the disruptive sleep habits of your partner? Have you ever had to deal with that? Snoring is the big one. So anyway, this is a new survey of 2,000 U.S. adults finds that 17%, so nearly one in five adults, say they have ended a relationship at some point solely because of their partner's disruptive sleep habits. Number one among them, snoring. In addition to the 17% who admit that this has been the reason why they broke up, 6% cited it as a contributing factor. Maybe there were other things going on, but this was maybe like the straw that broke the camel's back. Snoring topped the list of grievances. 62% of breakup descriptions included snoring. So they asked her, you know, what was it? What sleep habit specifically was it that caused an issue? 62% cited snoring. Women reported being bothered by snoring more than men, 49% versus 39%. And snoring was number one among 44% of respondents. 62% listed it, 44% put it right at the top. Beyond snoring, some of the other disruptive sleep habits, 30% cited excessive tossing and turning, 27% cited cover stealing. Your partner steals the covers. And so those were the big three. Despite all of these frustrations, though, 64% said that they would accept a partner's habits and stay. One in five actually end the relationship over this, but two-thirds said that they would accept a partner's habits and stay. But there are things that they would do to cope with those issues. let's see here, 20% said that they actually sleep separately from their partner. They sleep in separate beds, separate rooms even. 17% will change their mattress, thinking, you know, that would be the issue. And 25% use supplements or sleep aids to overcome those issues that their partner keeping them up at night with their disruptive sleep habits. Has this ever been a problem in your relationship? Kind of interesting. And you relate to some of that. I have to admit that we, my wife and I, have had these issues. We've had this in our relationship over the years as well. And usually I'm the culprit. I'll admit it. It is one of Findlay's biggest and most anticipated events of the year, and it returns this weekend. Flag City Balloon Fest lifts off on Friday, and the balloon lady, Kelly Bibbler, is with us this morning to give us all of the details. How many balloons are going to be part of this this year? Because I know it varies from year to year.
We have 33 this year.
Wow, 33. Is that like a record? I mean, what is the most? That seems like a lot.
It's pretty, honestly, it's pretty normal. Really? I mean, that's about an average number that we like to have, and that gives us a chance to kind of show them off and get some in the sky and some at the field. And
as we have mentioned in the past, they come from all over.
Yes. Florida, New Mexico, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania. Man. Yep, all over.
Yeah. And all kinds of different designs and colors. And I mean, the balloonists really, this is a big deal. The, you know, designs and patterns and, you know, all of that on the balloons themselves. It's really cool.
I think people would really be surprised at how much thought goes into naming the balloon, what the balloon's going to look like. And usually the balloons are an extension of their personality.
Yeah. So we've done this for, you know, how many years now? And so everybody knows what the Balloon Fest is, and the fact that, you know, they come in, they have the launches and the glow events in the evenings are big draws. But the Balloon Fest itself is much more than just about the balloons. You got all kinds of things going on for both Friday and Saturday schedule.
Yeah, we really pride ourselves on being a fun, family-friendly event. There's no charge to get in. You can bring your kids out. We have a kids zone, lots of food vendors, car motorcycle show. We have new this year's a wiffle ball tournament on Saturday, craft show vendors. We have entertainment. There's just lots of fun things to do out at Emory Adams.
And the full schedule of all of this stuff is on the website, right?
Yes, flagcityballoonfest.com.
You know, we got the whole dedicated website for the event. Yes. You mentioned that this is free, and that actually is a bit unique. A lot of these events that are held in other places, there is an admission charge, and you know, this is one of the things that I think makes this one special, is that it is open to all. Come on down, enjoy a full day with the balloons and more. It's just a terrific event that, man, this takes an awful long time to put together.
Yeah, there are 12 of us. We volunteer our time. We all have full-time jobs and other things and families that we do, but we come together because we love this event. But yeah, you mentioned, you know, it's a free event. You can come out, watch the balloons take off and land. You can watch the glow encounter. You can watch the drone show. You can see all of that and not have to pay a dime.
Yeah, the drone show is one of the new things this year, right?
Yes, absolutely. We've partnered with the same company that did it over in Bluffton for their America 250 celebration. So we'll have a few more characters in the sky, but yeah, we're really excited about this. And also it's a little bit more friendly for those that maybe have some issues with fireworks.
So sure.
It's
sure.
Not, you know.
So when is the drone show happening specifically?
So the drone show is on Friday evening at 9:30. So okay. Friday evening, the balloons will fly in, fly out. Then we'll have the glow encounter at 8:45.
Okay.
And then following that will be the drone show.
Because that's what I was going to ask, if that was before or after the glow. So the glow first and then the drone show. Boy, that'll be make sure that your phones are charged up so you can snap all kinds yes. of pictures and videos, because there'll be a lot of folks want to capture and those moments.
Feel free to post those and tag us on them, too. We love seeing the pictures.
Obviously, the balloon flights, everybody looks forward to that. You know, not just at the park, but that becomes a community event. Yes. You know, as balloons are flying all over Findlay and landing in various neighborhoods. And that's another thing that's kind of cool about this, is that it doesn't just happen in the park itself.
No, I mean, depending on how the wind's going, you could, any direction in town could see the balloons, or if you have a space that's kind of wide open and you put a white sheet in your yard, that tells our balloonists that you give them permission to land there. So okay. That's a nice tidbit of information.
And when are the actual balloon flights?
So they're morning and evening. So morning, usually around 7 a.m., and then in the evening, again, around 6:30 p.m. So we're trying to work it out. So we have some taking off from Emory and flying out in the community. Okay. And then we have some launching elsewhere and flying in.
Again, what's I think really fascinating about this that we've learned over the years is that there's a reason why the balloon flights are scheduled when they are. I mean, there's a kind of a limited window as to when you yes. can normally do that.
Yes. I mean, if you think about that, how they're fueled and mm-hmm. What different atmospheric conditions can do to them, heat, rain, all of that stuff. So yeah. It really is a tight window of like the perfect opportunity to get them up and get them flying.
I often mention that this is the one weekend out of the year when we pay attention to wind speed in the forecast.
Yes.
I mean, most of yes. the time you don't give it much of a thought unless it's something, you know, like hurricane force winds or something. Generally, you don't pay attention if it's, you know, 5 miles an hour versus 10 miles an hour. But these things make a big difference when it comes to launching the balloons.
They do. And the pilots are, first of all, this is an investment for them.
Sure.
So it's a financial investment, but also it's a safety issue. So right. They are very cautious about that. And we spend a lot of time at the field talking and making the decision. So if we have to, for some reason, cancel something, it's a lot of consideration has gone in yeah. and we've looked at every angle we could possibly fly.
Yeah. And to that end, if folks want to learn a little bit more about, you know, the balloons, you know, the pilots are, I know you've got a meet and greet scheduled, yes. But generally yes. Pretty much any time you see the pilots and their balloons, they're kind of hard to miss with their big balloons. Yes. They love talking about, you know, this, yeah. this hobby, this passion that they have.
They do. And they're always trying to instill in the next generation their love of ballooning. So they're always willing to talk. Anytime you see them, you can they'll share their story and talk about it.
You know, you know, you've got a winning event when the people who are participating, the balloonists in this case, are having as much fun as the community. Because
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we have balloonists that have been with us since we started in 1999. Mm-hmm. So that says something about our event that they keep coming back.
Yeah. So give us all of the details on this. Again, it is primarily Friday and Saturday. There's, I guess, what one final launch on Sunday is the tradition. Yes. But yes. primarily, this is a Friday-Saturday event. Give us all of the details here.
Yeah. So Friday at 4 is when we open the field. So there'll be food vendors and craft show vendors and all kinds of mm-hmm. The kids zone will open. There'll be bounce houses and pony rides and lots of stuff for the kids. And then like I said earlier, the launch. We have opening ceremonies. The balloons fly in and out. We have entertainment on Friday and Saturday night down in the entertainment area. So we have a stage down there.
Yeah.
And then we have the glow encounter, which is a very popular activity. And then the drone show on Friday. And then Saturday, we'll start again with balloon launches. We have a car and motorcycle show from 10 to 2. Once again, the kids area, all that stuff opens about 11 a.m. We have helicopter rides. I mentioned this earlier. We have a wiffle ball mania tournament. That's new this year. We partnered with the Blackhawks fast pitch softball team. That's on Saturday, pilot meet and greet. And then kind of in the evenings, the same kind of thing we do. We give away 4 scholarships every year, thanks to Ohio Logistics and Harold Shuck. So we'll give those away on Friday evening, and then we'll do it all over again with the balloon launch, the entertainment, and the glow. So,
right.
And then one last launch on Sunday morning.
All right. As we mentioned, the full schedule of events is on the website, and we've got that linked up at our webpage, goodmornings.net. And real quickly here, we're almost out of time, but again, parking and logistically, best to carpool.
Yes.
And you're going to want to be parking kind of in the outlying areas. It's limited parking there at the park itself.
Yeah. So north and south ends are parking. Once again, we're limited by the space that's at the park. And
right.
We want to be kind to those that live around there. So just use your head a little bit and carpool. Yeah.
All right. Good stuff there. We look forward to it every year. Flag City Balloon Fest lifting off this weekend. Kelly Bibbler, thanks very much for the preview. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. That is goodmornings.net. Also, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, we would also appreciate it if you would take a moment or two to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform to help others discover the show as well, and we thank you very much for that. Coming up tomorrow on the program, boy, what a big weekend this is around town. We'll preview this week's Summer Art Walk in downtown Findlay. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.